This is VOA News. I'm Steve Norman. U.S. Defense Chief Jim Mattis is the latest member of the Trump administration to announce that he's stepping down. AP Sagar Magani is following the story.
President Trump tweets his Pentagon chief of nearly 2 years will leave in February. The two have clashed over the president's go-it-alone stance on world affairs, including yesterday's announcement of a Syria troop pullout. Mattis made reference to their differences in his resignation letter, writing it's right for him to step down because, quote, you have the right to have a Secretary of Defense whose views are better aligned with yours on these and other subjects. The retired four-star Marine general was perhaps the administration's most respected foreign policy official. The president says he'll soon name a replacement. Sagar Magani, Washington.
U.S. military developing plans to withdraw up to half of the 14,000 American troops serving in Afghanistan. This would mark a sharp change in the Trump administration's policy aimed at forcing the Taliban to the peace table. The Republican-led U.S. House of Representatives has passed a temporary spending bill that gives President Trump $5 billion for a wall along the U.S. border with Mexico. The bill now goes to the U.S. Senate, where analysts say it has no chance of being approved. President Trump spoke about the need for a border wall.
Essential to border security is a powerful physical barrier. Walls work, whether we like it or not. They work better than anything.
Mr. Trump has demanded the money to build the wall to keep illegal immigrants out of the U.S. Islamic State fighters in Syria should not expect any relief from the pounding of U.S. and coalition airstrikes, at least for now. The assurance from the U.S. military after President Trump declared victory over IS. This is VOA News. At a marathon year-end news conference in Moscow, Russian President Vladimir Putin issued a warning about the rising threat of a nuclear war, pointing a finger of blame at Washington. Here's AP's Ben Thomas.
Vladimir Putin said U.S. withdrawal from the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty and its reluctance to negotiate an extension of the New START agreement are leading to a breakup of the world's arms control system. U.S. officials have said withdrawal from the INF Treaty is being prompted by Russian violations. But Putin insists Russia has to ensure its security, and Washington shouldn't, in his words, squeak later about Russia gaining unilateral advantages. He says Russia's simply trying to preserve balance and security, and adds American actions could lead to a global nuclear catastrophe. Ben Thomas, Washington.
Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has urged caution in the wake of detention of a third Canadian by China since the arrest in Vancouver December 1st of the chief financial officer of the giant Chinese telecom Huawei. Meng Wanzhou is being sought by the U.S. for alleged sanctions violations and is requesting her extradition. University of Toronto scholar Nelson Weissman tells VOA while Prime Minister Trudeau is trying to be cautious, it may not be well received in Canada.
I think what he's thinking is that by being more aggressive, for example, by calling the Chinese president, this might simply lead to poor conditions for the Canadians being detained and for Canadian businesses in China being penalized in some way. So the approach of the government appears to be, well, we'll go through normal consular channels.
Prime Minister Trudeau says his priority is the safety and security of Canadians abroad. In U.S. stock market news, the Dow Jones Industrials fell another 2% Thursday. Here's AP's Warren Levinson.
As recently as August, the NASDAQ composite was at a record high. Since then, it's down almost 20%. Peter Tuckman at Quattro Securities, who's been watching this kind of activity for 33 years, says a declining market has a logic of its own.
And once markets start to sort of reel and roll over and fall, they fall.
Wall Street traders are fond of saying the street isn't much moved by what's happening in Washington, though Tuckman concedes the chaos there is at least a minor factor in stocks' downward move, especially given that economic forecasts remain positive. Warren Levinson, New York.
British government has deployed troops to the second busiest airport, Gatwick, in the country, after drones flying over the runway forced hundreds of flights to be grounded during this year's busiest travel season. I'm Steve Norman, VOA News.
America. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, December 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sunday's election in the Democratic Republic of Congo has been postponed.
We have postponed the election for 7 days. This postponement is due to the technical constraint related to
Kinshasa. That's Corneille Nanga, president of Congo's Electoral Commission. President Kabila's ruling coalition says it will use the one-week delay to work harder to elect its candidate. Migrants and refugees in Libya are subjected to horrific abuse, and Zimbabwe teachers conclude a two-week march to Harare seeking better pay.
It was a journey where we faced some challenges along the way. Some of our comrades being injured along the way, but we remain determined that we want to send a message to the government, and here we are. We are now arriving in Harare.
Olbrim Masarure is an official of the Zimbabwe Teachers Union. Barcelona pulls black market migrant metal recyclers out of the shadows, and a Liberian journalist launches his book in Liberia. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Election officials in the Democratic Republic of Congo have postponed Sunday's general election to December 30th. The move comes a week after a fire destroyed thousands of voting machines intended for the capital, Kinshasa. Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg with additional reporting from Anastasie Tudishti and Abdulrahman Dia in Kinshasa.
This is more than just a last-minute delay to a hotly anticipated, already often delayed election that would have seen the departure of Congo's president 2 years after his mandate ended. Congo's top electoral official, Corneille Nanga, announced the delay late Thursday, just 3 days before the December 23rd poll. Nanga cited a fire that destroyed thousands of voting machines in the capital last week as the main reason.
We have postponed the election for 7 days. And the election is going to take place on the 30th of December this year. This postponement is due to technical constraints related to Kinshasa problem. So, the election will take place in about 7 days. Thank you very much.
But the news was not well received in the opposition-friendly capital, where students protested upon learning of the delay. Meanwhile, the International Criminal Court's chief prosecutor sent out a grave warning. "I am concerned," Chief Prosecutor Fatou Bensouda said in a statement, "by the growing tensions in the Democratic Republic of the Congo and the risk of escalating violence that could lead to the commission of grave crimes under the jurisdiction of the International Criminal Court." Theodore Ngoy, an opposition presidential candidate, told VOA's French to Africa service that Nanga informed candidates of the delay earlier Thursday. I will use the vocabulary that was given to us by the Independent National Electoral Commission, CENI, he told VOA's French service. The CENI has found itself technically incapable of organizing the elections on December 23rd. Just a week ago, Nanga promised that the election would continue as planned on December 23rd, despite a massive fire that tore through a Kinshasa warehouse and destroyed thousands of voting machines, electoral materials, and vehicles. Longtime Congo analyst Stephanie Walters told VOA the delay is worrying on many levels.
The fact that the CENI waited until 3 days before the poll means that they really aren't particularly serious about this. It's the kind of thing where you're organizing an event of this magnitude where you should be able to tell months ahead whether you're on track. So it's not really a great performance on their behalf. And I anticipate that there will be a huge outcry from the opposition and possibly more protests in the streets of Kinshasa.
Kinshasa was tense but calm Thursday as the announcement was made. The day before, the capital's governor banned campaigning in the city over threats of street violence. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
An official of President Joseph Kabila's ruling Common Front for Congo Coalition says the coalition will use the one-week delay to work harder to elect ex-candidate Emmanuel Ramazani Shadary. Andre Alain Atundu says the ruling coalition is convinced from the start that Mr. Shadary would win even if the elections were held on December 23rd. This comes after Congo's Electoral Commission President Corneille Nangaa Thursday announced the postponement of the December 23rd presidential election due to what he called technical constraints related to the Kinshasa province. Atundu says the ruling coalition is happy that the delay was announced with transparency to avoid false interpretation.
First of all, the ruling coalition recalled formally this decision as from a qualified authority. And we appreciate that it was announced in transparency in order to avoid any false interpretation. But meanwhile, we'll try to take advantage of this 1 week more to work for the benefit of our candidate, Mr. Shadar.
The president of CINE, the election commission, Mr. Nangaa, said he's postponing the election because of the fire that destroyed ballot papers, the ongoing Ebola outbreak in the eastern part, and ethnic violence. But all these were there before. So some people are saying perhaps the ruling coalition sees the writing on the wall that it was going to lose the election on Sunday.
No, we are not going to lose election. According to sociological data, to objective vision of the way the campaign is running, we don't fear to lose election. We hope, we are convinced that our candidate will win because, first of all, he came from the majority part considering sociological side. Majority is a big part of the opinion. And opposition is a little part of the opinion. For this little party, there are two main, Mr. Tshisekedi and Mr. Fayulu. They have to share, first of all, their electors. Meanwhile, Mr. Shadari, the entirety of the elect. So, considering these data, we can say that Mr. Shadari is on his way to win the election without doubt.
The delay is just 7 days. Will the ruling coalition be prepared and ready come 30th of December?
We are ready for 23, and this 1 week more given by independent circumstances or by the decision of CENI, I tell you that we'll try to take advantage of this 1 week more to work deeply and more for the victory of our candidate.
Mr. Atundu, thank you very much again. Let me say happy holidays to you.
Happy holidays to you, too. Thank you, James.
Andre Ali Atundu is the spokesman for President Joseph Kabila's ruling Common Front for Congo Coalition. You're speaking with me from the capital, Kinshasa. A group of teachers finished a 300-kilometer protest march on Thursday to push President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government to pay them in U.S. dollars and improve their working conditions. But the government refused to meet them when they arrived Thursday in Harare. Columbus Mavunga reports.
Members of Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe saying no to bond note salaries as they arrive in Harare Thursday. That marked the end of their two-week-long march from Tare to Harare, where they wanted to petition President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government to pay them in U.S. dollars. Robson Chere is the Secretary General of the Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe.
We should be paid in U.S. dollars because we last negotiated with the government in U.S. dollars. Now they are saying U.S. dollar is 1:1 with bond note. And when the reality is not the same, when it comes, when you want to buy, bond note is not equivalent to U.S. dollar.
The teachers say the bond notes are losing value and are actually worth about 1/4 of a U.S. dollar. Zimbabwe started printing the currency 2 years ago to ease cash shortages. This month, Zimbabwe's doctors were the first to demand salaries in U.S. dollars, and they are still on strike. The teacher's salary caravan was blocked by arrest until Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights intervened for the release of the teachers who had been detained during the protests. Union Chief Chere again.
No, it was a journey where we faced some challenges along the way. Some of our comrades being injured along the way, developing blisters. And also, we have been arrested several times along the way as well. But we remain determined that we want to send a message to the government. And here we are. We are now arriving in Harar.
After being denied a meeting with Zimbabwe's Finance Minister Muthuli Ncube, Teachers Union official Obed Masaraure said the protest will continue.
Then we'll permanently reside here. Schools are not going to be opening. All the teachers are going to be residing here. We are confident that in schools open, more teachers will be joining us here. This is going to be permanent residence of all teachers across the country. Schools are not going to be opening in January until the grievance salaries is addressed. But we are determined to be here as long as it takes.
Wednesday, the government said Vice President Constantino Chiwenga would soon meet the striking doctors. President Emmerson Mnangagwa plans to meet Friday with another group of teachers which did not take part in the salary caravan. The marching teachers say they do not need a meeting because the president already knows their problems and demands. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, December 21st. And please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 16:30 past the hour. A UN report documents a litany of violations and abuses committed against migrants and refugees as soon as they arrive in Libya and throughout their stay. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva at the launch of the report published jointly by the UN Support Mission in Libya and the UN Human Rights Office.
Libya is the gateway to Europe for thousands of impoverished migrants seeking a better life and refugees fleeing violence and persecution. Unfortunately, when they arrive in Libya, the United Nations reports many of them fall into the hands of a wide range of state officials, armed groups, smugglers, and traffickers. The UN Human Rights Office says these groups subject the migrants and refugees to what it calls unimaginable horrors. These include unlawful killings, torture, arbitrary detention, gang rape, slavery, forced labor, and extortion. UN monitors visited 11 official government-run detention centers where thousands of migrants and refugees are being held. They documented cases of torture, beatings, and forced labor. They said the inmates were starved and women were raped by their guards. Human rights spokesman Rupert Colville tells VOA, conditions for people held by armed groups and criminal gangs in unofficial detention centers are even worse.
They sort of specialize in selling people, basically. They'll sell migrants either for labor, for sort of forced labor or slavery, or women for sex. And they'll pass them from gang to gang and so on, and then shoot people, kill people, torture people, leave them to starve to death, horrendous stuff. Just treating them like cheap commodities that can be thrown away if you can't sell them.
The 61-page report covers a 20-month period up to August. It is based on 1,300 interviews conducted by UN human rights staff in Libya, as well as from migrants who have returned to Nigeria or have reached Italy. UN officials say the climate of lawlessness in Libya provides fertile ground for atrocities and illicit activities to thrive. It says widespread impunity in the country make migrants and refugees vulnerable for exploitation and extortion by human traffickers and criminal smuggling networks. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
African migrants coming to Europe dream of landing a good job, but the reality is usually much harder. Working on the streets, collecting garbage, or picking fruit and vegetables in the fields, the migrants are not legally allowed to work while they wait for asylum claims to be processed, which can take months or years, so they are forced into the black market. As Henry Richwell reports, the city of Barcelona is becoming a hub for migrants in Spain, where the number of new arrivals has risen sharply this year to more than 55,000.
On the sidewalks of Barcelona, they are a common sight. Mainly African migrants heaving shopping carts full of scrap metal, scoured from building sites and backyards, often weighing hundreds of kilograms. It is back-breaking and badly paid work, but a means of survival. A cartload can be sold to recycling firms for around $35 or $50 if they are lucky. Supporters say they are doing a valuable job. Critics argue they are part of a black market increasingly run by criminal gangs who exploit the migrants. So authorities are stepping in to clean up the business. Alencop is a city-run cooperative that offers some protection for the collectors. They offer Barcelona residents timetabled collections and special appointments, collection by van or bike, job security and a guaranteed price for the migrants. Among them is Eric Cutter, who arrived in Spain last year from Ghana.
Alencop has done many things for me. Because I entered Alencop without papel, without anything, but now I have my documents.
Cutter was unprepared for how tough life would be.
What is different is I knew that if I enter here, things will be difficult as I get in here. Because I think Europe is very rich as I hear before. And then, but when I enter here, no, things are not as I was thinking.
Other migrants in the city have carved out their own commercial niche, selling mainly counterfeit goods on the streets. They are known as manteros because they sell their goods on blankets or mantas. If the police come, everything is wrapped in the blanket for a quick getaway. Local store owners say they are losing business. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, Barcelona, Spain.
Liberian journalist Rodney Sear has officially launched his book, Journalist on Trial in Liberia. Sear is the publisher of Front Page Africa, Liberia's leading newspaper. Journalist on Trial is the memoir of events that Sear has reported on in Liberia, the Gambia, and other parts of the world. As Moses Gazier would report from Monrovia, the book highlights the fight against corruption, attacks on the media, and Sear's own 5,000-year jail sentence once imposed by a court in Liberia.
After launching the book overseas, Sear Liberia launch on Thursday was a huge success. Journalists and admirers of Mr. Sear's fearless journalistic work attended the launch. One of them was the president of the West Africa Journalists Association, Peter Kwekwe.
There are lessons from 2013 and the trial of Rodney, because I think there were too many lessons for the judiciary to learn. There were too many lessons for us journalists to learn and for government to learn.
The president of the Press Union of Liberia, Charles Coffey, said he was delighted that Mr. Sear was leading a generation of investigative journalists in Liberia.
Thank you for this book. The book detailed their imprisonment and went beyond that, also talk about how some government officials were prosecuted because of your report action. We have to emulate your example and seek other means to empower those who continue to write.
Most of the developments catalogued in Journalists on Trial were already reported on and published by Sear in his Front Page Africa newspaper. He was taken to court and even received a 5,000-year prison sentence from the Liberian government, but Sear says he was simply doing his job.
I saw things that happening that I think needed to be told. I saw things that needed to be changed. And as Liberians and as journalists, we owe it to the people to make sure that we stand at the test of time, and I think we're going to do that. Government has to understand that, you know, we only here to do a piece of job. We're not here against anybody. We're just trying to make sure that our country is peaceful and the media can function in the society where everyone understands what it's all about.
One man who followed the court proceedings against Sear is Malcolm Joseph, executive director of the Center for Media Studies and Peace Building. He said excerpts in the book are quite significant for Liberia and the journalism profession.
I think this is healthy and it's good for every journalist to embark upon that so that future generation can be able to read and understand what may have transpired in the past.
Rodney Sear is one of the most criticized Liberian journalists for his stance on corruption, human rights, and and governance. His front page African newspaper remains an unwavering voice of the public. While it is often condemned by the government, it is not clear what reception his new book, Journalists on Trial, will receive from the current government. Moses Gazio, VOA News, Monrovia.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin with the CAF Champions League. The first round of the 2018-2019 CAF Champions League will wrap up with 15 matches across the continent this weekend. The action gets underway later tonight in Ethiopia when Jimma Aba Jifar will take on the challenge of trying to overturn a 2-0 deficit against eight-time champions and Egyptian heavyweights Al Ahly. Saturday features will include Algeria club Sportive Constantine, who are 1-0 winners against Vipers SC of Uganda. Shortly after arriving in Kampala, club Sportive Constantine coach Dennis Lavange was confident of victory.
And the players are ready to fight Saturday and to win the game and beat the team of Vipers. They are very, very motivated and ready to play a very big game.
In other Saturday games, Nigeria champions Lobi Stars will be looking to overturn a 3-1 deficit when they host Kenya's Gomahia in Enugu. TP Mazembe will take a 1-0 lead to Ndola, where they will take on host Zesco United. And South African sides Orlando Pirates and Mamelodi Sundowns will look to take hold of their goalless ties against African Sports in Windhoek and Al Ahly Benghazi in Pretoria, respectively. The peak of Sunday's game comes from Abidjan, where Ivorian giant ASEC Mimosas enjoy a 1-0 lead over Stade Malien, while Tanzanian side Simba will aim to overturn a 2-1 first leg defeat at the hands of Zambian side Nkana. The 15 aggregate winners will join 2018 competition winners Esperance de Tunis in the group stage, while the losers will drop into the playoff round of the second-tier CAF Confederations Cup. And on to West African football powerhouse Ghana, where President Nana Addo Akufo-Addo has urged Ghanaians to remain calm while the normalization committee carry on their mission of ensuring a sane football environment in the country. Following a documentary in June which exposed bribery and corruption among several football administrators, all activities relating to the sports were put on hold, with FIFA and CAF mandating the normalization committee to sanitize the entire system. The president is now hoping that at the completion of the tenure of the normalization committee, Ghana football will come off better than it is at the present.
A new beginning in Ghanaian football administration is going to be started, because the process is there for them to make a new constitution and to begin at the beginning and put in a structure that hopefully will prevent the kind of things that we have seen in the past. That is my hope, and I think it should be the hope of all of us.
In Tanzania, with the semi-finalists qualifying to represent the continent at the FIFA Under 17 World Cup in Peru next year. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Weeks of bickering and negotiation in Somalia's parliament have stopped an effort to remove President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmajo through impeachment. Opponents of the president agreed in writing on Thursday that the impeachment motion was invalid. Analysts say the letter from parliament was a political lifeline to the besieged president. And that is it for this Friday, December 21st. First edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford and reporters Peter Claudie and Ricky Stryak, I'm James Botti, wishing you a very good weekend.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour. Whoa. Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews. Ooh. Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London
Twitter at Border Crossings or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. Or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.